Well, today I want to explain some of the ideas behind the proof of the existence of canonical models. Let me first draw a big picture. So, look at all the Shamar varieties. You can group them in different ways, and here we have I'll write this down and remind you again. Here the weight is rational. Here the weight is not rational. And here things are of an abelian type. And here they're not. And here things are of Hodge type. So abelian type includes Hodge type. And down here, if you like, oops, this line here is the Ziegle case. This is not the scale. So abelian type means that that there's an embedding of the derived group into a symplectic group. Hodge type meant that preserving the axis. Hodge type meant that there was an embedding of G itself into a symplectic group, preserving the axis. And the weight we have a lot of maps from H from S into GR. And sitting inside here, we have GM. And these maps only depend on X. According to the axioms, different H's give you the same map across here. This is called the weight map. And there are two cases. The weight map might be defined over, both these groups are defined over Q. So you can ask whether the weight map is defined over Q, and either it is or it isn't. And so we get these cases. Now the point is that up here, everything, all the Shamar varieties parameterize. Well, abelian, for the Hodge type, they're abelian varieties. For the abelian type, they're not abelian varieties, but they're sort of chunks of abelian varieties. More precisely, the abelian motive plus additional data. Here, we hope they parameterize motive, but we don't know that. And here, they don't parameterize anything interesting. That's a rough classification of Shamar varieties. So the proof of the existence of canonical models, there are three big steps. The first step is to prove it for, in the abelian case, abelian type, assuming rational weight. So here you can exploit the fact that it actually parameterizes abelian varieties or abelian motives more generally. So you exploit abelian varieties, or more generally motives. And the second case is, suppose you know it for some class of varieties with rational weight, then you can get it for some other class of varieties with irrational weight. So if you know it for some, we can give a much more precise statement, but this will do for the moment. Some varieties with rational weight. Then you get it, this implies, you show that implies it for varieties, some varieties, not rational weight. Well, the weight is not rational. So certainly if you know it for all Shamor varieties of rational weight, then you imply it for all Shamor varieties of any weight. But it's more precise than that if you know it for some. And the third thing, of course, that takes care of everything on the left up there of the line. On the right of the line, you have to then do the general case. And this is somewhat independent of, so there's a proof that works in the general case, which is somewhat independent of the first two cases, but it does assume canonical models for Shamor varieties of type A1. So mainly I want to discuss this case. But first of all, we have to start look at the general question. So Shamor varieties are defined over the complex numbers, and the question is, so we have, even if you have an action of automorphism, the complex numbers on the points of the Shamor variety, when does that come from something down here? So we want to study the general question. For some reason, I'm changing notation. So this is an algebraically closed field. And we want to know when something up here comes from something down here, and characteristic zero. And suppose we have a variety V over omega plus an action of, so let A be the automorphism group of this over this. So suppose we have a variety up here plus an action of A on it, on its points, just some action. So given something here and a point here, I'll write it sigma star P because it's just some action. So as we're given this, so the question is, when does this P come from something down here? So come from a variety over K. So every time you have a variety over K, you get this. And the question is, given this, when does it come from down here? Well, the point is there are a couple of obvious necessary conditions you need, and it turns out they're also sufficient. So what's the first necessary condition? Well, somehow, this is just a set, and we have this group acting on it, but somehow the action should remember the fact that this is not just a set, it's a set of points on an algebraic variety. So you need a regularity condition. And the way to, so I'll say the action is, the way to say that is as follows. So if you have a sigma and an automorphism of omega, then we get a sigma V. V is defined over omega. We apply sigma to the coefficients of the defining polynomials, etc. And we get a map from its omega points to here. I mean, so given a point here, we get a sigma p here. So I want to send this to sigma star p. So I get a map of, okay, so first of all, I apply sigma to this, and then I get a point here, p. So p was originally in v omega. So I get this, and I get a map like this, just sending the genuine sigma p, which lies on a different variety, to the sort of fake one there that's given by the action. So we get a map of points from points of this variety to points on this variety, and this map, which I'll write F sigma, should be regular. Should be come from a regular map of varieties. Sigma star of P, we're given an action, I'm putting conditions on the action. That's the way I'm writing the action, to distinguish it from other actions which occur more naturally, like this one here. So we're given this and we're writing down conditions. So I'll say that the action is regular if for every sigma in here, this map across here, which is a priori just a map of points, is actually given by a regular map. Okay? That's obviously necessary because if this action here does come from a V0 over K, then sigma V is actually just V itself again. If the equations defining V actually have coefficients in little k, this is just V, and this map is just identity map. So identity map is certainly irregular. So we certainly need that condition. Another condition we need is what I call continuity. It's not quite so pleasant. And it says that there should exist a field sitting in here, which is finitely generated as a field over K. And there should exist a model of the, so finitely generated, I mean, for example, could be generated by finitely many transitional elements plus a finite number of algebraic elements. So we'll say that the action is continuous if there exists a finitely generated extension like this in a model of V over L, such that when you look at the action of automorphisms of omega that fix L, then that action comes from down here. So the action of, so the condition is there exists a finitely generated extension of K, a model of V0, V over L, such that the action, that action restricted to this group is the one coming from a V0. So the action of omega over L on V omega is that coming from this, from V0. Well, we're writing down conditions so that which is supposed to imply that V comes from K itself. So this is sort of an unpleasant condition because it says that we have to assume that in fact V plus the action comes from something which is finitely generated over K before we can prove it comes from something over K. So this is definitely an unpleasant condition. But we'll see how a way of checking this condition. And then the theorem, which goes back to André Weil, says that so let V be quasi-projective. If you thought all varieties are quasi-projective, then you don't have to worry about this condition. Well, then it just says that so every regular, it just says these conditions enough, every regular continuous action so every V plus a regular continuous action of A arises from a V0 over K. It's a little amusing that Grothendieck wrote zillions of pages on this sort of question of descent, but the theorem one needs doesn't occur in any of Grothendieck's work, and you need this one from André Weil. Fortunately, Of course, Andre Weil writes using the language of foundations of algebraic geometry, which means that nobody can read it anymore. But fortunately, there is a modern version of this proof. It's not so hard. Yeah, I should say, where does this quasi-projectivity come in? There's one other obvious necessary condition, and that is that there should be lots of open affines in here, which is stabilized by the action of A. And now, if V is not a quasi-projective variety, you can write down group actions which don't stabilize enough affines to cover the variety. So there's this extra obvious condition. One of the things you check is that the quasi-projective implies that condition, that V, in fact, is covered by affines which are stabilized by the action of A. You have that condition. So I'll put references for this in the notes. But so let me give you a criterion for continuity. So again, I have the situation over there. I have a V over omega plus an action star, and we assume that it's a regular action. Then I claim that it'll be continuous if it satisfies the following condition. So if there exists, so it'll be continuous. That's sort of a nasty one. Well, I guess they're both kind of hard to check sometimes, but this will help us check the continuity condition in the case that we already know the action is regular. So continuous if there exists a finite set of points P1 through PM belong to V omega such that only the identity automorphism, only the identity automorphism fixes the points. So I mean fix each PI. So by that I mean automorphisms of V is an algebraic variety. So V may have automorphisms as an algebraic variety, but if you have an automorphism that fixes each PI, then that has to be the identity automorphism. So if you can find points with that satisfying that condition, and such that there exists an L over K, which is finitely generated as a field, such that sigma star PI is equal to PI for all sigma fixing L. So if you have a regular action and a finite set of points satisfying these two conditions, I claim that the action is actually continuous. So I'll actually give you the proof. Easy. This is very useful. So the proof. Well, of course, if you have algebraic variety over omega, it's just defined by only finitely many polynomials, so it certainly has a model over some finitely generated extension of K. So if we take this particular L here and we enlarge it, we can assume that V has a model say V0 over L. the same arrows down there. So we just enlarge it so that V has a model V zero of it. Now we get two actions of omega over L on the omega, the one that we started with, and the one that comes from V0 from this model over L. And I claim that these two actions are the same. So we have two actions. I claim that they're the same. Well, we're assuming that our original action was regular, so from each action we get a map from sigma v to v, and this has a regular map. It has the characterizing property that it sends, well, for the one action, it just sends sigma star to P. And the other action, so that's the one, that's the sigma star action. From the other one, it just sends sigma star to, no, it sends sigma P to sigma star P. And the other one, it sends sigma P to P. But now if we take, so we have these two maps. One of them does this and one of them does that. And let me just observe that because I forgot to say we're in characteristic zero. I did say we're in characteristic zero. Because we're in characteristic zero and you have I want to say this is an automatically an isomorphism. Maybe I better assume that my variety is a norm singular. I have to be worried about whether if you have a bijection of a map of varieties and it's a bijection on points, then is it an isomorphism of varieties? Well, it certainly is if they're non-singular. So this is actually, both of these maps are isomorphisms. So both of them actually, so they both send each PI to sigma PI to PI. They both have that property because of this thing here. So we have two isomorphisms from here to here. So they'll differ by an automorphism of V. And the automorphism of V will fix each of the PIs and therefore be the identity. So that tells us that the two actions define the same F sigma, and therefore the two actions are the same. And therefore it implies continuity. Well, before I can sketch the proof in the top left-hand case up there, as usual, there are some preliminaries. So, suppose M, let's say, is a nice topological space, so it's a manifold, make sure. And then, By a local system of Z modules on M, a sheaf of Z modules that is on some covering. So it's locally. Is the constant sheaf defined by finitely generated free Z module. Free finitely generated Z module. So by local system of Z modules, I just mean the sheaf, which is locally on small enough open sets, it's the constant sheaf defined by a free finitely generated module. And the thing I need is that, so if you have such a thing, and you take a point belonging to M, so if you have a local system, then there exists an action of the fundamental group on the five, so I should assume that M is connected in order to get a true statement. So if M is connected, then there exists an action of pi 1, the fundamental group on the fiber of this sheaf at the base point. And the functor that sends F to F0 plus this action is an equivalence of categories. So in other words, given a local system of Z modules, we get a free finitely generated Z module plus an action of the fundamental group on it, and I claim that every such pair comes from a local system, and that in fact this is an equivalence of categories. Some people are nodding at least. I would like to say that this, you can find this in all topology textbooks, but I don't think you can find it in any topology textbook, can you? Maybe I'll explain how the fundamental group acts, because it's rather cute. So if you have your, so you should, if you're not familiar with these things, you should simply think of local system of Z modules. You have a Z module over every point, and somehow it's growing nicely. So if I take my point here and I take a loop in here, so I'm mapping this into here, I can pull my local system back here. And in particular, this tells us that if you have a simply connected space, then really all the local systems are constant. So if you pull it back here, then you get a constant local system. So there's one Z module over here, which is isomorphic. Well, you get one Z module, so it's a constant. And you pull it back to the interval here, it's a constant local system. That means it's defined by one Z module, and all the fibers are, in fact, isomorphic to this one Z module. And no more letters. It's called N. Now, the thing is that you have one module, since this point goes, these points go to the same point here. This module actually turns up twice. So we have it's isomorphic to this one and this way, and it's isomorphic to this one and this way, so you get an automorphism of the fiber over this point here. Roughly speaking, what you're doing is you're going around here and you come back, and that gives you an automorphism. So you take this generates it gives you an element in the fundamental group, and it acts on the fiber over zero in this fashion of O. Okay, so we need that. And then we need that Riemann's theorem holds in families. So So what I mean by that, well, so let's just be a smooth variety. And by a family of abelian varieties, I mean the obvious thing. I mean a map of varieties and a map from the fiber product of A to A such that on each fiber, if you look over any point, this thing gives you an abelian variety. So this is a regular map of varieties. That's what I mean by a family of abelian varieties. And what do I mean by Riemann theorem holding in families? Well, I'll state it and explain a little what it says. So I claim that there's a functor an equivalence. So you write A goes to R1 pi lower star of Z. The point is given something like this. H fiber, you get a cohomology group, H1 A0 Z. And it's a theorem that these form a local system. And not only that, but each fiber has a Hodge structure. So there's an equivalence from here to here from families of abelian varieties. So now we're working over the complex numbers. Over V to polarizable integral variations of Hodge structures. So if the variety exists of a single point, this is the old Riemann theorem that I stated last time, not last time, but a while ago. Then the polarizable integral variation of Hodge structures is simply a power of type 1, 0, 0, 1. Okay. So what this means is that you get an equivalence of categories between the families of abelian varieties and certain families, and the starting point is a local system of Z modules. And then on each fiber over here, you have a Hodge structure of this type and a polarization on the Hodge structure. And I actually defined all these terms in the second lecture, except there, instead of having a local system of Z modules, they had one fixed Z module or one fixed Q vector space. And I actually defined a variation of Hodge structures, if you remember. Well, what's different here is that this is not constant. It's a local system of Z modules rather than one Z module. So the fastest way to define this is this is sitting on VC regarded as a manifold. So it has a universal covering space, and the local system will become a constant local system up here. And so you just take by a polarizable variation integral blah 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 of Hodge structures down here, I mean a local system of Z modules plus on each fiber Hodge structure of this type, etc. just that when you pull it back to here, you get a variation of Hausch structures as I defined it before. Okay. But just think of this as, just think of this as just a nice continuous family of BM varieties, and just think of this as some nice continuous family of Hodge structures. It's more than that. So we need that. I should say, you might think, well, this theorem is some order of magnitude harder than to prove than Riemann's theorem, but it's not really. I mean, the point is, if you understand the proof of Riemann's theorem, then you can sort of make the same argument work over some base space and families rather than just over a single point. It's really much the same proof. It's not more of the language that's harder. Okay. So let me sketch a proof of the existence of canonical models. Certainly, if you have a proper map, proper smooth map, maybe. I mean, that's really the point of variation of our structures. that's the whole point of variation of our structures. I think I said that rather quickly at the end of the second lecture, but okay. So let's take a Chamorro variety of Hodge type. So we have abelian varieties rather than abelian motives. So this, what does Hodge type mean? It means that we have an embedding of G into some symplectic group. And it's compatible with the X maps into the corresponding X for the symplectic group. But then, under this situation, the Chamorro variety this is going to be a rather sketchy sketch, but so this corresponds to abelian varieties. Plus additional data. After isomorphism. And so given a point here, we get the BM variety plus data up to isomorphism, and we have an action of automorphisms of C over the reflex field here. So I can define an action here by sigma star of P corresponds to sigma AP plus beta. So since what we have on the right here is all algebraic, or at least we can apply sigma to it, we get an action of this on the right-hand side, and we transfer back to an action here. And if we can prove, so the point is that if we can prove that this action is regular, Well, first of all, we have to check the conditions of Bayes' theorem, which the thing is that Betty Borel tells us that this is, in fact, is a quasi-projective variety, so that's a good start. So if we can prove that this action is regular and continuous, then we'll get a model over the reflex field. And then Shimura Tanyama will tell us, so if we can prove this, if this, then we get a model of our Shimura variety over the reflex field. And then Shimura Tanyama will imply that the model is canonical. Namely, the special points here will correspond to BM varieties of CM type here. Shimura Tanyama tells us how automorphisms of the complex numbers act on abelian varieties of CM type, and the condition to be a canonical model was carefully designed so that this was true. So the whole proof comes down to showing that this action is both regular and continuous. So regular meant, recall this meant that a certain map from sigma from here, if you like, to here, certain map was given by this action was a regular map. Now, if you have a map to check that it's regular, it's enough to check it on each connected component for sure. So instead of working with the whole Shimura variety, you can work with a kinetic component of it. And we know what the kinetic components look like, x plus over gamma, where gamma is arithmetic in G-derived Q. And x plus is a emission symmetric domain. So we have this situation here. Now we have this action up here, and remember, arithmetic subgroups, what do? They're the sort of things that stabilize lattices up there. So in fact, given this representation here, it's a rational representation, and an arithmetic subgroup, there exists a lattice lambda, so this is a lattice in V, where V is a vector space over Q, which is stabilized by gamma under this action. Now, in this situation, we always choose gamma small. Now, this is a simply connected. I mentioned that summation symmetric domains are simply connected, and this acts freely on this. So this gamma, in fact, is a group of covering transformations. So this, in other words, gamma is the fundamental group down here. And what we have is a representation of gamma on a lattice. So according to this thing here, we get a local system down here. So out of the out of this, we get a local system local system F, local system of Z modules down here. Now the points of this maps H and T into the real points here, onto the real points here. So each of the, well, I guess I could say it in this way. If we take the constant lambda up here, this has a structure of a variation. This is a variation of Hodge structures. I discussed this a lot in lecture two. If we can think of this as a constant local system up here, and each point is an H, and the H defines a Hodge structure on lambda tensor R. And the point is that this constant local system up here gives us a non-constant local system down here because of this proposition over here. So we get actually a variation of Hodge structures, etc. So the constant local system lambda descends down to here, and the variation of Hodge structures will go with it. So we get a local system variation of Hodge structures, polarizable, et cetera. So now we can use the Riemann theorem and the family. So we get an abelian scheme or family of abelian varieties down here. Okay. And now, plus data. All the other stuff goes with it, polarization and whatever. And now the point is I can apply sigma fixing the reflex field to this, and I get, this is an algebraic variety. I can apply sigma to it. The reason for going from here down to here is this is all becomes algebraic. This is an algebraic variety. This is not an algebraic variety. Makes no sense to apply sigma to X plus, but it does make sense to apply sigma down here. So we get this, and we get a family of abelian varieties plus additional data over here. And we get a map, let's call it. But of course, what's sitting over a point here, I mean, if you look at a point here, you look at the fiber over it, that's an abelian variety plus data, and that was certainly in the isomorphism class that we were looking at in here, right? So this is what we've done, is we've got instead of just having a 1-1 correspondence of two sets, we've got a much better thing. We've actually has a family of abelian varieties, and in fact, the whole family carries the additional data, and over each point we have a thing that corresponds to the point here. That's what this whole thing has done so far. And now, what is this variety? We have no idea what this variety looks like. You take this thing, but anyway, it's a nice smooth variety. So you can take its universal covering space. And then go backwards. So this is the F sigma, the one we're trying to prove regular. So now we can run things backwards, and given this sigma A plus data, we get a variation of Hodge structures. And we can pull that back here, and we get a variation of Hodge structures here. No, I also discussed in the second lecture that given a variation of Hodge structures, then on a Hermitian symmetric domain, in fact, you can characterize the complex structure on this. It's a unique complex structure such that this family of Hodge structures actually is a variation of Hodge structures, which means that the map from here into the Grassmannian, it's actually a genuine Grassmannian, not a flag manifold in this case, where you send. So here we have, say, a vector space. We do have a vector space V, And the Hodge structure in this case is just Hodge decomposition, in this case just there's two components, so we get a filtration. So we get take one of the two bits in VC, and that gives us a subspace. So that gives us a map from here into a Grassmannian. And the whole point was that this is a holomorphic map. And in fact, it characterizes the complex structure on here. Now here we have a variation of Hodge structures, and we get a map here. If you analyze things, so this is holomorphic as well. I won't attempt to do it, but if you analyze this, then, well, I should be choosing base points. There should be a base point here and a base point there and a base point here and a base point here. So this is a variation of Hodge structures, and if you choose a base, even in the case of a simply connected space, in order to get a trivialization like this, you have to choose a base point. So there are base points, but you can check that this thing actually maps into this one here. So you get a map across here, and these maps are holomorphic, so this actually goes into there. So this is you get a holomorphic map here, which sends the base point here to the base point there. So the only thing is to check that this one actually goes into the image of that, and so you have to unwind what's going on. Well, now we're done because this is holomorphic, and this diagram commutes, and so this is a local isomorphism. So if this map is holomorphic, map on the covering space is holomorphic, then the map down here is holomorphic. So this is holomorphic. So now we can apply Borel's theorem that says that any holomorphic map from here to something like that is actually regular. Now we have the continuity condition. We can apply the criterion that I wrote down. Everything's erased. We have to find a finite number of points which rigidify a Shimorov idea. And again, there's a K in there, so this is just a finite union of things that look like this. So I want to find a number of points that rigidify that, and TFACT is that the automorphism group of a variety like this is finite. And those of you who have been industriously reading the notes know that I snuck a proof of that into section 3. So. Well, no, I just choose a, well, I could choose any point, but I choose a special point. And we know that if I fix a special point and I just look at pairs like this where A belong to GAF, there's a risky dense in here. You know, I fix this one, I vary this one. There's a risky dense in there. So the only order, certainly what that means is the only automorphism of this, fixing all points like this with a fixed X, but the only one is the identity automorphism. But since there are only finitely many of these, I only have to take finitely many of these. Okay, so. So I choose PI equal to X AI. If you have an automorphism of this, it's going to have to move at least one of those, so I add that in, and that gets rid of that automorphism. So I have a finite set of automorphisms, finite set of points. Right. Now remember how we were trying to prove that this action here is continuous. So what we've got to do is prove that there's some field finitely generated over the reflex field. So that if I take an automorphism of C fixing this, then sigma star PI is equal to PI. Where sigma star means the action that corresponds to applying sigma to the Bn variety data over here. Well, now Shimura Taniyama tells us again exactly how automorphisms of complex numbers act on C and the Bn varieties. We took this to be special, so the points here correspond to C and the Bn varieties, and Shimura Taniyama tells us how things act. I mean, for starters, they act, anything that fixes this fixes the point. And since we have a K in here, in fact, anything, there'll be a finite extension here. Shimura Taniyama will tell us that there's some finite, that the automorphisms of C over this field, which is a finite extension, this acts through a finite extension here. So not only is L finitely generated over this, there's actually a finite extension of this. So applying Shimura Taniyama again to see that this will hold for all the sigmas. I mean, what that's saying is that for the sigmas fixing some finite extension of this, when we apply sigma to this, we get an isomorphic set of data. Okay. Shimura Taniyama tells us that that's true. Okay, so that's an outline of the proof. And the same argument works for everything in here. Okay. So maybe say a word about the other cases. Any questions about this? I look a little suspicious. It's not so hard. Well, it's not quite so easy as I tried to make it, but not too hard. So the next thing is to look at going from here to here. And there are two methods. There's one which Berlin calls the maladroit method. And the other one, which presumably must be called the adroit method then. The adroit method actually is very elegant, but it's also very hard to write down. So the idea of the adroit method is, if you look at the Shimura variety, so if we look at it over the complex numbers, we discussed this quite a lot in one lecture. And then if you take a point here, at least in the good case, we could describe this completely, and what we had up here was the connected Shimura variety. So given the Shimura variety, you get this data over here, plus some group actions. And the point is, first observation is, well, the group actions is the tricky point, but you can, in fact, reconstruct the whole of this from this and this, and some group actions, which I'm not going to describe, but there are groups acting on all these things. Berlin's observation is that you can do this on the canonical models as well. So it's suppose that we have a canonical model of this. So this is defined over this whole this side here is defined over EGX. Now this point is not going to be defined over EGX. It's going to be defined over some infinite extension. But so this is says coordinates in some monster extension of this. But Deligne's observation is starting from a canonical model. Here you get this plus an action of the Galois group, some Galois group which you can write down explicitly. And we get this and this. So given a canonical model here, we get this. And it's possible to say exactly what this is in such a fashion that you can go backwards from here to here. So given a canonical model here, he defines the notion of a canonical model here. And the point is, you can go backwards from here to here. So given this, you get a canonical model that connected Chamorro-Ratti, which is something which lives over some big extension of the reflex field. And stated correctly, given a canonical model, you can go back to here. Now, the key point of this is that whether or not a canonical model exists only depends on this. Doesn't depend on the whole of that. So if you have two Chamorro data, GX and, say, G prime, X prime, and suppose that when you go to the derived groups and go to a connected component, suppose that these two give you the same thing. And suppose you know that a canonical model exists here, then a canonical model would exist here. That's the idea of the adjoint method. So what you do is if you have a Chamorro-Ratti whose weight is not defined over Q, suppose this one here, the weight is not defined over Q. Not over Q. What you do is you concoct another Chamorro-Ratti which does have weight defined over Q and has the same derived group. This one has the same derived group as that one. And then by this part here, if we're in the abelian type case, this one will have a canonical model. So the identity component will have a canonical model, and that allows you to go all the way back to here. Okay, that's the idea. So I'll spare you the maladroit method. And then the question is this other question, what do you do if you don't have any abelian varieties or anything? Well, I have no time, so.